Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to our channel, please consider subscribing to it and hit the bell icon so that you never miss an update. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to be in conversation with an exceptional tech entrepreneur from Bangalore, Mr. Ravi Kiran Annaswamy. Ravi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. It's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Ravi is the co-founder and CEO of Numocity Technologies. He's passionate about clean mobility. He has been a serial entrepreneur. He has been the co-founder of the Deccan Institute of Design. He's the co-director of the Founders Institute, and he has spent his early career with Nokia and Siemens. So Ravi, let's talk about Numocity Technologies. Tell me about this venture.
Sure. So electric vehicles is right now the buzzword in India, around the globe. I think thanks to Tesla, who popularized it, and now NIO, everybody else. I think we all talk about electric vehicles because there's a sense of feeling that electric vehicles will reduce the pollution, will change the way we transport ourselves and goods and people. We believe that when we look at electric mobility, there is a coming of four different industries together. Mm-hmm. Automobile predominantly, because you are changing the vehicle, you're changing the vehicle design by introducing electrical components into it, which was earlier more of a gasoline or an IC engine, which was there. The second industry which comes in is now you have to fuel these vehicles from a totally different industry, which is not doing it right now.
Right.
I mean, it is the oil and gas which was fueling the vehicles. Now you look at power industry, which is not new, which has been lighting us, giving other things, but now they have to fuel the vehicles.
Right.
Now, the third thing is, when we are talking about all of this, thanks to the current digital technologies, everything is connected. Now, no longer you can't talk about how am I going to do these systems. Mm-hmm. So you need a telecom world or the connected world coming in.
Right.
And the last, more little cliche, all of them are going to get data out.
Right.
They need workflows in, they need all connectivity in. And you need to bring all these three industries together very seamlessly. Only then you will actually grow the electric vehicle industry. Otherwise, each one is talking in silos doing it. And this is the premise which we believe would be extremely important going forward. As Numocity, we want to be the fourth layer, which is the digital layer and the connectivity layer, which connects all of these, ensures systems grow very well, scale very well, and people make money out of it. I mean, there are a lot of people who will invest in electric vehicles, not only vehicles, the charging infrastructure, the batteries.
Yeah.
And we want to ensure that everybody makes money and we grow together. So Numocity is a digital platform connecting all these entities with multiple workflows to ensuring people to make money and run these systems in the right way so that we can scale faster. In a country like India, it's extremely important.
Fascinating. And, you know, what are, according to you, the challenges in accelerating electric mobility?
Yeah, so different countries seem to have a different set of challenge. If you look at India right now, one is we are a very price conscious market. When you look at electric vehicles at this point, whether you take two wheelers to car, the vehicle price is 1.5 times to nearly 2 times in some of the cases than what you would have as a existing product in the market.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is one hindrance at this point. The problem is there is the battery cost. The battery right now makes almost 50% of the vehicle cost, and battery price is more than $100 per kilowatt hour. At that price, this is what you will get. Of course, there are early adopters in the market, and the business owners, which are like fleets, logistic owners, they see a business case immediately. But for a retail user like you and me, I think once the price starts to come down and we have more variety. I always take an analogy to take a minute, Ashutosh.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at early 90s or late 90s, when we had telecom coming in, telecom industry, if you remember, we had thick mobile phones. We had expensive telephone calls, 20 rupees.
16 rupees a minute.
60 rupees. The reason was the network was not available.
Mm.
The number of users were low. And the phones were bulkier because there was no innovation. There was only 4 models or 3 models available.
Right.
It's exactly where we are right now in the EV industry.
Very interesting.
So the moment there are more cars and more users, the price of battery will come down. With volume, the price will come down. Chicken and egg infrastructure, charging infrastructure will come up.
Yeah.
So I expect that in a year or two, unfortunately, pandemic slowed down by a year, maybe a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in a 2 years' time, we will suddenly see this explosion, like it happened in telecom. So then by 2030, we will see a rapid adoption of EVs on the road.
Amazing. And you seem to have seen the early stages of from Nokia and Siemens in telecom, and now are seeing the early stages of electric.
That's the confidence we have. We have seen it once, and we believe it's exactly in a similar state right now, and we strongly believe it will happen. Maybe it is taking a little more time. We'll need some policy intervention, some price drop, some more competitors, and the market will open up.
You know, you just spoke about the price of batteries. I was talking to a friend of mine who does a lot of work on battery technology in Taiwan. And he was telling me that it is really the storage capacity of batteries.
Correct.
Which is holding up the rapid scale up rather than just the price. What are your thoughts?
No, absolutely. So right now we are with the lithium ion batteries with a particular chemistry, particular thing. So the cell determines the capacity, which also determines the price of the whole battery pack. Mm-hmm. And right now, also one of the reasons in India, the price being high, is we do not make the cells. We actually import every cell which is used in electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. We only make the packs. We only make the technologies on top. The cell still is imported. So the price of that is determined by somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that leads to more pricier batteries in India. Mm-hmm. There are alternate technologies, zinc-based, different chemistry-based batteries are being talked about. It will take probably a few more years before we see an alternate technology coming up. But at this moment, for at least for the near time, 3 years to 4 years, I think it will be lithium ion. It will be this technology, this chemistry. And the prices will only, my feeling is only driven by the scale. Chemistry will make an impact probably in 5 years time.
Okay. And from an infrastructure perspective, is India ready to start looking at a huge explosion of electric vehicles, or are we still far away?
No, not really. Because see, this is where the chicken and egg comes. Like I took an example of telecom. Do the tower come first or the phones come first? I believe both should happen at the same time. That's what India is trying right now. We have seen government of India installing their own chargers, at least a few thousand now. Mm-hmm. But looking at India, where we would need maybe a few million chargers, we are talking about few thousand chargers. I mean, we are in a factor of almost probably 10,000 times lower than what it should be.
Right.
But there are private players who are investing a lot in this. We see a lot of malls, apartments, everywhere, because wherever people are buying vehicles, they're demanding. So there's a demand for it. I need a charging infrastructure. So that is coming up. So we expect that by end of this year, next year, we will have probably in a tens of thousands of chargers, which will happen by 2025. The target was 500,000 charger in India. I don't think it will happen. It will take probably another year or two. Mm-hmm. But once we reach those numbers, we are in a good critical mass. Just to keep a number in perspective, there are only 70,000 petrol pumps in India. Now probably it's around 75,000-80,000. Mm-hmm. Even if you consider two chargers per petrol pump, that's kind of a dimension. We should be around 2 lakh chargers. But we are targeting 5 lakh chargers. So if we really reach that number, we should be good enough to kickstart the adoption and the acceleration of EVs.
Amazing. That's quite amazing. And, you know, I can't possibly not have a discussion with you on the most iconic car, which is Tesla. So my question to you is that Tesla started in 2008 and continues to be aspirational and expensive. And yet I am seeing a lot of other car manufacturers coming in with electric cars, whether it's a Toyota or whether it's the Tatas. Why is it that the ramp up or the you know, just the demand for a non-Tesla car is anywhere near the Tesla brand?
Yeah, so if you look at Tesla and the markets they serve, it's predominantly US. Mm-hmm. Even in US, if you look at where they are, it's the California. Mostly it is in California, which is where they are and which is the tech hub. I think that's where the demand started. If you look at even the adoption of Tesla throughout US, it's not uniform. It's very, very West Coast centric. It's not really anywhere else.
Right.
Europe, there has been some adoption. The challenge has been Tesla has been aspirational, right? The way you put it, they've really achieved a certain level of technological superiority in the way they've got their batteries, their motors, the range they can get, the technologies involved. But that makes it very pricey and aspirational. But for a market like India, we don't need a Tesla. If you notice now, Tata launched their own car called Tata Nexon EV. Nexon EV has done amazingly well for what it is in India. I mean, it is not comparable to Tesla in whatever way. But it's a small SUV which can serve Indian roads, Indian market. And it is giving a right range, not giving great range, but a good range. Of course, there has been some controversies in Delhi. Did they give as much as what they promised? Mm-hmm. But they've sold more than 5,000 cars as of now in the last 1.5 years, mm-hmm. or less than 1.5 years. And that's a phenomenal performance for that car. And we believe that more such cars will come in the market. And with other OEMs launching these vehicles, we will adopt it. And we don't need Tesla. Tesla is coming to India, yeah. but Tesla will remain still probably a high category segment vehicle, which will not be a common man's vehicle anyway. So it is going to be probably the Tatas and the Mahindras and maybe Hyundai and Maruti who will launch their variants in sub 10 lakh brand, which is what will drive the adoption.
And, you know, I'm sure you've done a lot of work on the economics of an electronic vehicle versus a fuel consumption, fuel combustion engine. Someone was saying that even though the capital cost may be higher, but you recover it in a very short period of time.
Absolutely. You are bang on there. So that's one of the reasons. All the electric, the fleets, whether you take a logistics, corporate taxi and the taxis are the first mover and adopters of electric vehicles, whether it's a two-wheeler or a car. The reason is if we have done modeling of multiple vehicles and what it means to from a cost of ownership point of view.
Right.
If you have a car, an electric car in India, and if you run minimum 200 kilometers a day, you recover your investment in a year's time, which is even 1/4 or 1/3 of what an IC engine return is. Mm-hmm. So for somebody who's driving the car for longer kilometers on a daily basis, EV makes absolute sense. There is no problem now. Even at the price what they're selling, even if it is 50% more, you get returns probably 2 times before what you would get with an IC engine. The same with the truck loaders, I mean, the small auto rickshaws, which is carrying logistic goods, Amazon, Big Basket, all of them using it. And two-wheelers, very clear business case. But for a retail user like you and me, who are not going to do 200 kilometers a day, it looks expensive. And our return is over a longer period. It's not, we will definitely have a better return than an IC engine, but it's not significant. We can't see it immediately saying, oh, it's such a factor of 2 or 3 that I need to buy. But for logistics, definitely, yes. I think that's where they are already adopting in big numbers.
You know, this is an amazing data you've given. 200 kilometers per day seems to be like a threshold to make it economically viable. And, you know, I guess the target will be to reduce that 200 to 50 because not too many individual users do 200 kilometers a day.
Absolutely. So that's when the prices starts to go down. I mean, if the battery and other things can be brought down. So if you bring it sub 100, sub 50, then I think it absolutely makes sense for everybody to be on an electric vehicle.
Very interesting. One more question on electronic vehicles and Numocity is what, in your opinion, should the role of the government be to bring in clean energy into our country?
Yeah, so there are two aspects now. One, from a pure clean energy aspect and then from an electric vehicle point. Clean energy, I think solar and wind have been pushed quite a lot for the last decade or so. And the catch there is we have done now, we have gone into double-digit percentage of energy generation is by renewables. I think we are touching nearly 20-odd% right now, which is significant for a market. In India, it is significant. There is still a scope because India has a lot of abundance of sunlight. So you can still add as many solar plants as whatever. But what has happened also in that market is the prices have come down drastically. The energy prices have come down. I think that has slowed down a little bit, but we still believe it would be, it will grow. It will become a larger percentage. Now, this is one of the underlying requirements for an electric vehicle industry to boom. The reason is, if you look at, are we totally carbon neutral in the electric vehicle? If we are doing 40-50% of our energy through burning coal and we move into electric vehicles, we are not changing the pollution factor. I mean, we are just reducing the urban pollution and increasing the pollution at the source where the generation happens. So what we believe is the more the renewable comes in, it's very good for fueling the electric vehicles because then you are making it actually net carbon neutral mobility because that's the more cleaner mobility. There are a lot of models by which we want to use renewables in electric vehicles. Battery swap systems is one of them where it's better to charge the batteries using a solar than using grid. So there are many ideas, many models emerging. Maybe it's another few years before we actually start seeing results from these experiments.
Very interesting. So now let me move to a few questions for you as a startup entrepreneur.
Sure.
You know, a very large number of our viewers and listeners are either entrepreneurs or wanting to be entrepreneurs.
Wantrepreneurs.
So my first question to you, Ravi, is that, you know, after an amazing career in the telecom world, you became an entrepreneur and then you had been co-founder of several companies. What, in your opinion, should an individual do? Should he or she go solo or look for a co-founder?
Yeah, very interesting question. So I've done with multiple co-founders. I've tried a solo journey. I've tried all of them. My personal experience is solo is very difficult. If you want to make a larger company, you want to have a scalable company, you need to have co-founders. It's very difficult to find the right co-founders because I always say it's like a marriage, because you're going to spend more time with your co-founder than your own family for most of the time. That's happened with me for almost a decade now. I'm spending more time with my co-founders than even my family. So you need to have people who are with you, who actually complements you. Many times we actually try to look at our friends to bring it on table, but if somebody is complimenting, you can grow very fast. If not, it's very difficult. If you're a solopreneur, entrepreneur, my experience is it's amazing in terms of your decision-making, your whatever you can do. But the moment you start to scale, you actually tend to see that you probably need another hand, couple of hands to really grow. So my learning has been, it's better to be with a co-founder, one, maximum two. More than that is a chaos from my experience. One is optimal, two, probably the best. A three-member team is the best. Two is okay. Two is good. But anything more than that doesn't work again. I mean, I've seen the other side also. It doesn't work if you have more than three.
Amazing. Well said. My next question to you is that, again, based on your experience, what are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup entrepreneurs make?
Yeah, so there are many, but some of them are that people think it's about their idea. Many of them are stuck to their idea and say, this is my idea. But which is a very wrong premise to start, because it's your idea, but whether it is solving somebody's problem, do you have a customer for it? Is somebody willing to pay for it? Many people overlook it, because when you are the first time, I've made that mistake myself, so I'm guilty too. When you start for the first time, you always believe you know better than everybody else. And you're starting because you have a conviction that the idea, the innovation you have is the best in the world, and you figured it all out. But what we miss right now is that maybe doesn't solve anybody's problem, and nobody is willing to pay for it, which means there's no customer for it. Correct. I think that's the first and foremost mistake. It's very good to be romantic about your idea. It's passionate. All of that is okay. But if you don't validate it, if you very early enough, if you don't get people to thrash it, give you the right feedback, it's a recipe for disaster. It's a matter of time before you figure out that it's not going to work. And that can be a lot more heartbreaking than learning about it in the beginning. You may not like it, but it's better to know about it in the beginning than after a year or two of doing that.
Fascinating. And my last question to you on startups before I move to the next segment.
Sure.
There's often a lot of debate. When should a startup start to scale up?
Yeah. So I've seen my startups who didn't scale, and now there are some of the companies which are scaling. So there are two ways to look at it, Ashutosh. One is whether can you plan, or does it really happen? My experience has been that as an entrepreneur, you will sense when the scale-up happens, when you see that your customers are coming back to you, when your customers are asking for more, more people are coming in without you going to them, and you start to see the revenues going up. All of that are interlinked in a way. And that's where you see the indication that you're scaling up. I'm not saying it is the scale-up. You get the indication that you're scaling up. If you then plan for it and say that now I know I'm going to scale up, so how am I going to change my sales processes? How am I going to change my support processes? It's actually more important on the sales and support. It's about customer success to scale than the product. That's an important thing, but more importantly, can you scale up the number of customers who can come in? Can you support them once they come in? I think if you can get that plan, it works well. But if you plan independent of that, my feeling is it has never worked. It's all on paper.
Wonderful. So I'm now going to move to the last segment of our conversation, which is some questions for you personally.
Perfect.
My first question is that you know, as you look back at life, what would you say are three key milestones in your career or your life?
Yeah. Maybe there are more milestones to come, but when I look back, I've been a technologist for a good part of my career and built products worldwide, made things work. I mean, that was a passion I had, almost saying that I want to build something. I've done a lot in Indian market, Asian market, and others. There was in my corporate life in Nokia, suddenly I was asked at one point of time to say, is this what you want to do all your life? And shouldn't you be more rounded in terms of knowing different things? Why are you stuck with only technology? I found it very odd, difficult at that time because I was doing great and somebody, one of my bosses were asking, hey, you can do a lot more, but you're stuck here. They made me to move to sales, which is, I resisted quite a lot in the beginning to say, that's not what I want to do. But it took me a few years. Then I ended up being heading the sales for some of the businesses in India. What I understood is moving from a technologist who's looking at how to build things to be able to actually go out and tell people that this is what it is and convince them to buy what you've built was a different skill altogether. That would say my first milestone, which also triggered me to become an entrepreneur because that gave me a hell lot of a confidence to say, I can do a lot more. I mean, not build, but now I can also sell it to anybody whom I want to sell it to. And that I would say is the first one because that gave a perspective. I'm still the same technologist. I haven't changed, but now I know means to convince somebody that why this technology is the best technology and why it is needed for them. I think that convincing thing is coming. Second is moving into a startup world because I was doing sufficiently good, great, probably in a corporate life. And people felt way back, exactly it is 10 years since I started as an entrepreneur. 2011 is when I moved out of my corporate life. So people thought I was crazy. At that time, 2011, there was no startup world. There was no buzzword. People felt you're crazy. But it was just that always an itch with me saying, if I can do it in a corporate setup so well, can I do it myself? I was quite sure that I can do it myself. I don't need to be always in a corporate setup. And that was the passion for me to say, I want to build a world-class company. I would say that's a milestone because it was very difficult because I took a call on the day I was getting probably a pretty big role in my previous company. Would have been a very career-defining role. But I was that day I had to sit and think saying, if I take that, I can't do anything else. I'll be stuck for several years because I'm also passionate about it. Correct. I will never do anything.
Correct.
So took a call with my family and said, I will jump today. And I went and told my boss, I'm not taking a promotion where I'm leaving to start a company. And he felt it was crazy. I think something is wrong with me. So that was, I would say, quite a thing for me personally because it changed everything the way I look at it.
Absolutely.
Third, I would say is in my corporate life, I always knew what success was because everything I did was successful. Everything I did worked very well for me with the system. The last 10 years, I've fallen down probably 5 times. I don't usually call myself a serial entrepreneur, which just means that I failed more than what I've succeeded. That's what it actually means. Because there are many companies we have done, many didn't work, where I was so confident that it would work. And that's a huge learning. That's a milestone for me because now I've seen how things cannot work and also not to take a failure as a failure. It's actually just that things didn't work or the timing was wrong. That's my lesson right now. Many a times my things which did not work are working right now. So I always know that it's just a matter of time. And that's been a third important milestone for me to experience those and understand that it's okay. It's okay to fail. And it's okay to move on and take learnings out of it.
Amazing. You know, and as you said, there are so many, many more milestones coming up in life ahead. Good luck for that. So, Ravi, I've got time for one more question.
Sure.
And, you know, you did mention, I was going to ask you on success, but you said, you know, that you've been successful a lot. So, the question I want to ask you is that who or what inspires you to keep pushing yourself to do so many different things?
Yeah, so it's usually not who, the what. So there are two things. One is what I feel. I always like to be in a very happy and very energized mode most of the time. And for me, every small thing which works, every small thing, even if I do a sale, if I get something working, gives me that daily happiness. I think that's something which drives continuously. I think it's been for the last 2.5 decades. That's what drives me. Every small thing which works, which whatever happens, it just gives a lot of happiness. So that keeps inner drive. And I need to see that different things, different change. And second is, I always believe that there is a lot of things to connect and a lot of things to learn from a lot of people. So network is something I believe it's extremely powerful for me. And I love to meet new people, learn from new things. And that's what makes me go to different ventures, different things, because I get to meet different people. I mean, I did a design school because I wanted to work with design professors. I mean, there I learned amazingly something which I never had experienced in my life. But now that I have it as a learning, when I do something next, I take from that learning. So multiple people have inspired. I've seen people from all walks of life, academics, people in the industry, teachers, people who are my customers. Everybody has been an inspiration. So you always look at them and say, hey, that's something I want to learn from.
Wow. Wow. Ravi, what an amazing conversation this has been. I mean, I have learned so many new things from you today. And I'm sure our listeners are going to be really delighted to hear everything you said. Thank you again for spending so much time, and good luck.
Thank you. Thank you, Ashutosh. It was a pleasure. And good luck to everybody who's listening in. If they're thinking of being an entrepreneur, all the very best to them.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.